Gunnervations Podcast for Saturday, February 4th, 2006, show number 44, coming to you from Sunnyvale, California. Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, thanks for all the feedback. I'm getting a lot of emails. I'm also seeing a lot of comments posted on podcastalley.com, which is the main podcast site for comments and voting. Rest assured, I read each and every comment that gets posted up on Podcast Alley. There's also a number of comments that are getting posted on iTunes. I think there's a total of 4 now. So you can either post at either one of those sites and let other listeners know what you think about the show. There's actually one comment posted on iTunes that is a little bit negative, but actually gives some good constructive criticism and feedback to the show. So I take all those to heart. I'm looking for honest feedback. You can always email me also at podcast@killerinnovations.com, and I'm working pretty diligently to stay up on responding to all of your emails. I'm looking for audio feedback. You can record this on your PC or any kind of a device that would generate either a WAV or an MP3 file and send it to me. We're going to play audio feedback on show number 50. So we're at show 44 today, coming up quickly on show number 50. Looking for feedback on the show, comments, how you've used the killer innovation approaches in your either business or personal life, or just general feedback or comments. So get those audio feedback in, give them to me in plenty of time so that I can roll them all up into show number 50. Also, it's after the first of the month, so don't forget to vote. Remember that all the voting at podcastalley.com restarts at the beginning of every month, so don't forget to vote. Voting is the best way or the easiest way for you to let the producers of your favorite podcast know that you do appreciate the effort. Let's see, upcoming events and appearances. I will be at the 3GSM conference in Barcelona, Spain from February 13th and 14th. So I'm only going to be there for 2 days. I'm not there for the entire show. I've got one listener who's dropped me an email about meeting up. If there's others, please just drop me an email, and we'll try to see if we can't coordinate the schedules. Also, I've gotten a few listener requests for giving speeches or making appearances. Feel free to send those to me, and we'll do the best to accommodate if it lines up with my travel schedule. Otherwise, we can also do things by phone or other means, okay? So feel free to send those to me. Segment 1, this week's topic is going to be about startup innovations. I get a number of emails from listeners talking about, okay, I've got this great idea. How do I translate it? I've never gone off and actually taken an idea and run it all the way through to creating a product. Now, we've talked about the process of how you do idea conversion into products in previous podcasts. But one of the things I don't think is covered very well, either by the blogs or by other publications, is what can you expect as kind of the phases that every innovator goes through. And what I'm going to focus on is a startup innovator. So this is, you've come up with this great idea, you're not going to do it within your current work environment, but you're thinking about or looking at potentially going off and starting something new. And there's basically, you know, 3 stages for all of us as innovators. One is that startup that you got that, you're the first time you've come up with an idea, it's the first time you're going to kind of step up on your own. Then there's what we call growth innovators. You know, so this is after you've done the startup and you're looking for that second, third, or fourth idea. And then the third kind of stage is what I would call repeat innovators. You've gone through, you've done the innovation, you've started something, you've sold it off, and now you're off doing the same, doing a second one. Sometimes that'll be referred to as kind of the serial entrepreneurs. So what I've done is I've laid out kind of what I think are the 14 phases for startup innovators. And I'm going to run through these fairly quickly, but I think you'll get the idea of what I'm talking about here. Stage one is really what I call fertilization. So this is the ideas germinating. You kind of get that inkling. You know you've got something here, that there may be some kind of a motivator. Phase two is what I would call a trigger event. There's something that's going to happen that's going to motivate you to really step forward and try to think about taking that idea and creating a potential business. Trigger events could be things like, in my case, having lost a job, back in the 80s, going through the downturn in Silicon Valley of the 80s. So those of you who are going through the downturn, or went through the downturn here in the 2000s, not the first time it happened. So in the case of me and some of my products and technology that I delivered early in the 80s, it was a trigger event from the standpoint of having going through an economic downturn and finding myself without really the safety net of a traditional job. Step three or phase three is your decision to start a business. You finally have made that decision, you're getting ready to pull the trigger, you're going to go off and really take this idea and go create something really great. Fourth, and this is probably the most important one, and that is finding a mentor. You need to gather personal support for what you're about to do, because it is scary to step out and take an idea that you have and run with it. So, step four, very important, find a mentor. Five is finding a customer. Now, you'll notice I put the mentor before the customer, because going out there and trying to find that first customer, if you have a mentor, they can be of great assistance in doing that. Plus, you just need that constant pick-me-up with all the no answers that you'll get from knocking on all the doors. Step six, finding money to develop the idea into a product. And again, you've noticed I put this after you find the customer. Seven, delivering the first product. That's the excitement of actually taking that idea, moving it forward, and then actually delivering it to a customer. Step eight, hire staff. And again, I'm doing these in very specific orders because I've seen a number of inventors, innovators going out there with a great idea, and they get this backwards. They think the first thing they ought to do is raise money, then they hire staff, then they build the product, and then they go find the customer. No, it's step five, find a customer. Six, get the money. Seven, deliver the first product on the on as, with the least amount of staff. And then eight, hire the staff. Phase nine, then you're in the fast growth phase. That's when all the adrenaline's pumping, you're out there selling customer two, three, four, on. Step 10, which every company will face, is the financial crises. You've overexpanded, you're growing too fast, or you grow too slow and you run out of cash. Every business runs into the financial crises. Phase 11, management crises. Management crises is that your partners or companies that you or the individual that you've hired in early on were great in the startup phase but can't grow the business. You're going to face that management crisis. Phase 12, partnering failure. This is partners that you're going to align with, whether that be your sales channel organizations, your manufacturing partners that you're using overseas, you're going to run into a partnering failure. Phase 13 is the consolidation phase. Every industry goes through it, every company goes through it. Think of this as kind of a pause, catching your breath before the next phase of growth for your business. And everybody goes through it. It can't always be up and to the right. You kind of have these little valleys you're going to go through. It's how you operate through these valleys that's going to determine the success of your idea. And then step 14, you're starting to look around. You're either losing interest in the business that you've started, or you're thinking about that next new idea. So again, real quick, number one, fertilization, germinating that idea. Two, some kind of a trigger event will motivate you to take that idea and really start thinking about a business. Three, decision to start the business. That's a defined step. You have to make that clear decision. Four, finding a mentor, gathering that personal support, that support network that's going to be so critical. Five, find a customer. Six, finding the money to develop the idea into the product. 7, deliver the first product. 8, then hire your staff. 9, get ready for that fast growth curve. 10, that first financial crisis that you're going to have where you're not going to have enough cash or you're not going to have enough sales to keep the growth going. 11, management crises. Every organization has it. 12, a partnering failure. 13, the consolidation phase, or think of it as kind of that downward pause before the next growth. 14, starting to look around. Either you've lost interest or you've got that next idea that's going to spin off the next business. So again, hopefully that you'll find this useful. It's the order of these are very specific, and what I have found when I've gone off and looked at companies that were started by inventors or highly creative or highly innovative individuals, these being the 14 steps that are good indicators for companies that are going to be successful. Companies that get these somewhat out of order, such as finding the money before the first customer, hiring staff too early, are red flags in my book for potential failure. Okay, segment 2, cross-pollinator. The last couple of weeks, I've been trying to get through some of my reading. And as you know, in the previous podcast, I mentioned Tom Kelly's new book, The 10 Faces of Innovators. And I was reading in his book about one of the key staff members or one of the key individuals you need for an innovative culture called the cross-pollinator. Now, it was a little shocking because when I read this, I literally, had to take a pause because when he describes what a cross-pollinator is, I quickly figured out that it was me. So let me read you this quote out of the book, and it's on, again, it's the book is The 10 Faces of Innovators, and it's talking about the cross-pollinators. So here's the quote. In the corporate world, you can usually spot people in cross-pollinator mode if you know what to look for. They're the product member or project member who translates arcane technical jargon from the research lab into vivid insights everyone can understand. They're the traveler ranges far and wide for business and pleasure, returning to share not just what they saw, but also what they learned. They're the voracious reader devouring books, magazines, and online sources to keep themselves and the team abreast of popular trends and topics. Well-rounded, they usually sport multiple interests that lend them the experience necessary to take an idea from one business challenge and apply it in a fresh context. They often write down their insights in order to increase the amount they can retain and pass on to others. They're dedicated note-takers, capturing insights in notebooks or electronic form. Cross-pollinators have eclectic backgrounds and develop a distinctive point of view by combining multiple strengths and interests. Well, when I read that, I quickly figured out, that it was me. And it kind of describes some of my more eclectic habits, such as my ferocious note-taking. In fact, I had dinner last weekend with a listener of the podcast here in Southern or in Northern California, here in Sunnyvale. And needless to say, this particular individual came in and had his Moleskine notebook with him with his ideas. And I actually had two of my Moleskines sitting in the car. I had didn't bring them into the restaurant, but when I've run into a number of the listeners, I'm finding that we all kind of have some of those similar habits of capturing those ideas, writing them down, being voracious readers, both online and in printed form. In my case, I have the benefit of being able to do extensive travel because of my business, my day job, but being able to look at, the activities or being able to see things from a different context or a different point of view. So I haven't never really seen one person really collect the all of those kind of eclectic habits that I have and be able to put a label to it. So now I kind of understand my weird behavior, and that my weird behavior really does have a purpose. So needless to say, I'm probably going to copy out this paragraph and give it to my wife so that she doesn't quite look at me so strangely every time I'm doing one of my strange habits with regards to innovation or creativity. Segment three, the killer question for this week is really about value chain. Now, many times when you're off working on an idea or a product concept or whatever, you tend to focus on the one item, whether it's a widget or a particular service or a particular capability that you're delivering to your customer base. But you quickly need to take a look at what is the entire value chain. Your component piece is only one of multiple pieces that have to be brought together to deliver the entire experience, whether that includes partnering with a retail channel if you're delivering a product to a consumer market. Well, that's part of that value chain. Customer walks into a store, sees your product on the shelf, the salesperson on the in the store has to be able to sell your product. That's part of the value chain. So the key here is to look at that entire value chain and then look at all the component pieces and then do an analysis from the standpoint of what is the overall value created. So this week's killer question is, what other products and services are used with mine that cost at least as much as mine? Again, what other products or services are used with mine that cost at least as much as mine? So how much is the customer paying? If a customer is paying $5 for your item, and then he pays $5 for a support contract, that's a total of $10 spent by the customer. So what are all the component pieces? And this doesn't have to be hard currency spent. It could be perceived value or perceived margin that the customer is willing to pay for to have the experience. So again, the question is, what other products or services are used with mine that cost at least as much as mine? Now then, when you figure out what that list is, there's obviously two next questions that you need to ask. One is could I replace or eliminate these other products or services and capture the value? So rather than letting other people control equal value in the value chain, can you take your product and either put functionality in your product and therefore eliminate the need for another component, for another piece of the value chain? Or can you just totally replace it with a partnering relationship to where you could be able to capture a bigger portion of the value? So again, once you've identified these other components in the value chain, the next question is, could I replace slash eliminate it and capture the value? The other question that you should think about also is, could you partner or acquire the other product or service? So if you have one component of the delivery and you look at the entire value chain and you see other participants in the value chain who are getting the same or if not more value from the customer, meaning they're getting more of the income or more of the overall spend, can you go off and acquire them or can you partner with them to get a larger portion of that overall value that's created? So again, this week's killer question is, what other products or services are used with mine that cost at least as much as mine? And then the follow-up questions are, could I replace or eliminate it and capture the value? Or could I partner and acquire the other product or service and capture the value? And with that, thanks for listening. We're coming up on show number 50. Send your audio feedback, messages, comments. You can send them to me as an email to podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can send me the audio feedback at 703-636-4460. Don't forget to vote. Remember, voting is the easiest way to let the producers of your favorite podcast know that you truly appreciate the effort. And at the beginning of the month, voting restarts back to zero. So please remember to go out to vote. You can also post your comments either at podcastalley.com, over at Apple iTunes, or any of the other sites that you regularly visit. Thanks for listening. Go out there, be creative this week. Come up with that one killer idea this week that's going to change the world. And have a great week. Bye-bye.